Hello, everyone. Thank you again for tuning in to this podcast. We highlight the Q&A session that we had with our IFR 17 seminar. So the CEO of MiraVT Consulting, Romeo Abada, and our regional expert in insurance from SAS, Kenneth Ko, and myself discussed some questions around why is it companies accept a really long project timeline? How are you so successful in convincing the top-level executives? We discuss in detail the nuances of the CSM calculation from a financial and actuary perspective. We also discuss whether or not we can tap data lakes and so much more. I think what you can really appreciate of IFR 17, it is really a framework for to become successful. However, it can be overwhelming. So we break down the barriers around their concerns or the audience concerns around this. And we really hope that this really adds value, especially that 2020 will be the year of education. And we see it really as a year for deciding which software or partners to actually get involved with. So I really hope you like this episode and enjoy.
So I have, thank you, Kenneth. Let's give him a round of applause. Thank you, Kenneth, for your presentation. So I think before we do the Q&A, I think we should just open up and tell something about ourselves. So I'm part of the customer advisory team. I think one of the things that I notice about Q&As and events like this, a lot of people are shy. So, all right, I'll tell you something about me. So I'm part of customer advisory, and I think the highlight for IFR 17 is really a framework for the compliance, and it may be overwhelming. I see audiences from finance, there's an audience from IT, and also an actuary. To be a bit more practical, I'll ask this with Kenneth, because I know him a bit more from an outward perspective. I know you do Spartan. You do Spartan, right? It's quite grueling, right? So from a perspective of a framework, what's your framework to prepare for a Spartan race? Yeah. It's not, but I will link it. Yeah.
Okay. I think it's a lot of discipline that needs to go into it.
Yeah.
Waking up early and putting yourself through the grind.
Right? It's like if Spartan is next weekend, what type of prep work do you have to do to actually do it?
Well, I guess you have to be committed to sleep early, don't drink the night before, wake up and start the run.
Okay.
Depending on your comfort level, it depends how far you can run and do some of the basic pull-ups and push-ups, whatever they get you through the obstacles.
Yeah, I mean, I can relate to you because I do CrossFit and I'm a CrossFit coach. So if I go to if I'm my gym and I have a new guy coming in, he tells me, Mark, grabe naman, ang hirap naman yung ginagawa nyo. I'm a new guy, I go to work, you know, 9 to 5. How can you introduce me to CrossFit? So I like that to IFR 17 because I'm not an actuary. I'm not a stat guy. But I think a bit of introduction or what we call education is very important. And I think, Romeo, I understand you do a bit of marathons also, right? Or used to, right? So I think a lot of our non-work stuff applies to these topics, right? So from a marathon, that's even harder. Or like an Ironman perspective, my run ka, my swim ka, my cycling, right? These are the components of it. So from Spartan and from marathons, what do you do to break it down to make it not overwhelming on your end? Not overwhelming. How do you prepare for it?
Well, actually, I started with marathon. Yeah. Then I moved to 3 years, right? Moved to triathlon. I did triathlon for 3 years. And then I was doing Spartan also. Okay. Now I'm leveled up. I'm doing physical therapy now. Or my shoulder injuries. Maybe I'm coming to the right age for a triathlon pinch.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think I think, but Spartan or triathlon, it's fun, right? When you figure everything out, you have a framework to learn it, right? I think it can become enjoyable. What do you think about it? Like,
yeah, true. Yeah. Especially if you do it together as a group, it's fun actually.
Okay.
And you don't suffer alone, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because I had a chat with a friend here from Prudential, and he's from IT. So his question, although he headed out, he had asked me is, do you need a specialized team or an A team? I mean, we all come from different groups, finance, that's one. You come from actuary, but you are not you won't expect everyone to be a level 10. So how do you approach in building these groups to make sure when you roll out IFR 17, you're okay? So I'll ask that first guy, Romeo, from a perspective of building a group or a team.
It's good we had this session. Remember since last year or 2 years ago, there have been already some presentations about IFR 17, very high level, being done by many, you know, audit firms, the big six. And last year, the industry had conducted this big IFR 7 seminar sponsored by the Actuarial Society of the Philippines, invited the audit partners. And now I think the right timing that we have to have the clarity in the core structure of the IFR 17 sub-ledger, that you've seen the presentations from Kenneth already. This is somehow the heart of the IFR 17 engine. And after this will be like, how do you actually concretize moving from the current core systems, you know, going to this adoption and what we call this alignment with the sub-ledger and putting it out into your financial reporting and your management reporting. So through the process, I think it's gonna be the best thing would be a combination of internal resources and the external resources. Remember, in terms of internal resources, you have to maintain your current operations, business as usual operations, that has to be maintained. Nothing of that should stop because you're trying to install the IFR 17. So there will be like one representative from actuarial, from finance, accounting, IT, from the PMO office, working together with like external advisors, external resources, to have this installation of the IFR 17. Actually through three major phases, you know, the communication, education, the road mapping to the system, core system enhancements, UAT, and then now doing the, you know, data preparation layer, stack transform load process to the sub-ledger, and then testing the output of the sub-ledger. Now aligning this with the sub, the core general ledger of the company. And then also now the work shadowing and the, you know, the knowledge transfer to the BAU. Normally it is gonna take, you know, from this point, I think you have to take one year to 2 year process.
Yeah, Kenneth, okay, is there anything you want to add about from a tech perspective, like the learning of the tool, whether it be SaaS or not SaaS, how teams can prepare?
Based on the work we are doing, we have actuaries finance from the customers working with us, and these people understand what IFRS 17 is. So when you work with any other vendors, it's good for you to know what IFRS 17 is, right? Especially from the actuaries in finance. Then of course the partner ecosystem is also very important because these are like your pseudo resources, right? And then they will also work with you. We help define and also to make sure that the software being used and developed or configured is good for your organization needs. Do you need an A team? I doubt so. Because those people I've heard so far have not gone out to recruit, you know, this group of people. They are using own resources, but they train them, they enable them, they have a lot of knowledge sharing about education programs that they go through just to improve their IFRS 17 knowledge.
So we have a question from MetLife, Nick. We had a chat earlier.
Okay.
But I have a question here regarding, for example, for insurance companies that are present or operating on different geographies, most probably they will be using different IFRS 17 software or vendors. So how would SaaS integrate with the other geographies?
Okay, so from the experiences we have, they are using the SaaS software. They are not using different software. So for example, like AIA. Anyone from AIA here? No one, Philip Life. Okay, AIA is using SaaS IFRS 17. PCA is using SaaS IFRS 17 and is filtered out to all their respective country BU teams as well. Now, the software is just an enabler for you to calculate, for you to generate the reports, right? Ultimately, at the end of the day, to make sure everything is aligned, is to make sure that your group reporting standards, the line items, is aligned with your current local BU reporting standards. The software is capable to make the alignment, means whatever you get for the line item, it must be the same as the line item. And if there's specific requirements that your group office wants to be to have it included, then these are the items that you need to let us know as well. What are the extra fields that your group office wants you guys to report?
Romeo, anything to add?
I believe like some global companies will tend to use one sub-ledger across all jurisdictions. But for Manulife, you think you have like different sub-ledgers from different regions? Or maybe you're referring to the general ledger of the Manulife operation?
For Manulife, we are now into one system like IFS, but although there are still some geographies still transitioning or still from SAN. So they're from SAN to IFS. So, to Lawson. So it means that every country or every geography has different software or system. So I'm thinking, for example, in Manulife Philippines will be using SAS, and Manulife Singapore will be using another vendor. So how would these two vendors integrate their technology?
Okay, so the technology component seems to be talking about the general ledger, is it?
Yes.
Oh, that one, no problem. Remember, we don't replace GL system, we don't replace actual software system. In fact, all this system will function as a data input source for us. Right, so regardless of which GL system you use, we'll tell you that SAS will require this form of information from your GL system to facilitate the IFRS 17 calculation. Similarly for your actual software as well, you could be using Rescue, Emblem, Prophet or some other live software or non-live software. Doesn't matter to SAS. Because for us, what's important is to have that data input so that we can orchestrate the IFRS 17 calculation.
Okay, yeah, I think I have to clarify that. I think you might be referring to the general lecture. Remember the core systems currently would be the actuarial software. Yeah? I think Manulife is using Axis. I'm not sure if some territories would have Prophet. And then you have your GL. You mentioned the SAN GL, so that's the general ledger. And with these two current core systems, they are fed coming from the policy administration systems, right? And then the commissioning system. Now, come IFRS 17. IFRS 17 will be presenting, like SAS, will be presenting the IFRS 17 engine. Okay, you still have to maintain your current actuarial software system and your SAN GL. And all this will have to be integrated and communicating with these systems. What's happening in other companies is that they are trying to change the GL, like the SAN GL, now moving to some, you know, cloud-based GL, so that they will have an easier integration of the, you know, consolidation of the reports across different jurisdictions. So some are doing some Oracle GL, some cloud-based system. That can actually happen in parallel to the adoption of an IFRS 17 sub-venture. Okay, and some companies that I know are doing this at the same time, Because for IFRS 17, to adopt IFRS 17, your general ledger will have to expand. No? You have to expand your chart of accounts to accommodate the IFRS 17 items. The same way for the actuarial software, like the Axis or the Profit, they're expanding the Axis and the Profit to accommodate new, you know, logic operations that will supply the required information to the IFRS 17 subledger. So,
did it clear up your question?
Did I answer your question?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. Next question is actually Fabio.
SAS is going to be used as a reporting tool, right? So how will be the software be managing the traffic of users, like for global?
Yeah. So the software SAS provides enterprise wide. There's no limitations to how many users. Yeah, there's no limitation. You can have 10,000 users, no problem.
So there won't be any lags.
There's no lag. The dependency is on the hardware. So that's where we can do the hardware sizing questionnaire, right? And then we can give you a specification.
When the involvement of the technology, been hearing about the data lake, so how is SAS ready for getting data and data lake instead of visual data more?
So the data lake would be just like a data warehouse for us to extract the data from. I'm not too sure where your data lake is sitting on, but we have certain access connectors that we can go in and we can extract all this data out. If we can't, then we probably may ask you to put the data into probably some SQL server that we can go in to extract it out. So no problem at all. In fact, we treat data lake as one of the database or data warehouse that we can go in and pull this data out.
So there's no updates needed if
No. But what's most important, in fact, for data lake is for us to understand what information is in the data lake. Because if you don't have the sufficient information, then we might need to go back to the source itself to extract out the info.
I'd like to ask a question.
Or maybe I just, we have like an actuarial representatives from Etica. I'd like to ask you, at what stage are you now in the IFRS 17? You're a regional corporation, right? Based in Malaysia. Then you have a Philippine operations here.
Actually, here in the Philippines, we're still looking into what we will do for the IFRS 17 preparation. We're kind of busy this year because of several product developments, but for Malaysia, we're not really sure how they will tackle the IFRS 17 problem. But
yeah, they're from Etica. Yeah, they can show something. So you can see the logo there, right?
Etica is SAS customer for IFRS 17. So I can tell you where we are currently in the project.
You come to the right venue. You can tell your boss you attended the SAS seminar.
So phase one was EY giving you the whole gap assessment paper. So we have gotten that assessment paper. Phase two is the implementation, which PwC is driving it. Now before we do the software installation, I need a technical paper from PwC. We were promised 12 sets of papers, but we only given 7 sets of papers. So we're not able to do anything yet. We're waiting for PwC to come back with a set of paper. But I'm telling you what we're doing. We are doing the data assessment with you guys right now. We've also began some of our home functionals requirement gathering in terms of you need the workshop and find what we need to do to configure the software to meet the needs. You are a composite insurer, right? So you have different approaches that you need to manage and also how you want to take care of the CSM movement across some of your unit product lines, your PUL product lines. So we are there. Currently, I think we'll start with Malaysia, we have implemented, then the blueprint template will be passed down to your
Philippines. That's right then.
luckily the portfolio of Asian of Ethica is generally, you know, PAA, the medical. There are few in long term individual problems. So the participation also of the company is very important.
Any other questions? If I may add.
Two questions actually, based on what is happening outside the Philippines and the other countries in the region. In the Philippines, actually, it's very difficult to go and present to Bangkok or to executives with a project timeline of more than 12 months. Yeah, it's very difficult to justify an initiative that goes with that type of timeline. But somehow in Malaysia and Thailand, the adoption is quite high. And we just want to know whether how were we able to get the buy-in, given that, as you mentioned earlier, it's approximately or on the average between 50 to 20 months. And at the same time, is the case really compliance-driven? Are there other benefits that is highlighted in the justification that made the executives approve the project, given the timeline that was mentioned?
Okay. So, firstly, I think this project for IFRS 17, we have to separate it from the normal data management analytics project, okay? When the consulting firm goes to your organization and when you speak to your C-level executives, when they do this gap assessment, sometimes it can take more than 12 months. So I think on the onset, people would know that this is not a very short period of project timeline. It may take a longer period of time. So how do we justify this project timeline of more than 12 months? Basically, there will not be, how should I put it, when we do this IFRS 17 project, I cannot identify any quick wins. So in a normal SaaS project, when we work with some of the insurance companies, let's say data analytics project, right? Every 3 months, we will try to develop certain quick wins for you. It could be customer segmentation, it could be prediction for insurance claims, underwriting. But because this is a full onset business transformation, and business transformation will take more than 12 months, if they all know. So when we go to the C-level executives, normally during the final phase, when we put in place the project timeline plan, 17 months, right, we will explain what we will do in each of these 17 months. There's the BRDs, there's the data mapping, there's the calculation, the posting, and the reporting, and we'll explain very clearly why this takes such a period of time to implement. They will understand, most of those that I met with, they can't understand why it takes such a long time, because don't forget, this is a transformation. And it takes time for it to happen. Yeah? Okay, beyond compliance, yes, the reason why AIA bought SaaS versus Profit, although they are using Profit Enterprise and they have a SAP system, is because they are looking to just beyond IFRS 17 only. So if you look at the technology I presented today, same technical platform, but in the future, you can add on business contents. For IFRS 9, for actual portfolio valuation, for financial projection reporting, as well, even for solvency too, right? So they are making a strategic investment. One platform, and in the future, I don't have to keep looking into other vendors because I don't want to maintain so many sets of software to fulfill all this regulation or whatever analysis they actually want to do. So that's why in terms of compliance driven, you have to look as well. Almost every vendor you meet will probably do the same, right? If they don't do the same, they probably say you might want to add on this feature, that feature. So again, you have that breakage in the meeting. But beyond IFRS 17, do consider, because the investment of this software is not cheap. Right? Whoever you meet will tell you it's going to be in the hundreds of thousands of US dollars, maybe in the millions or so. If you're going to invest this amount, you might as well maximize it and consider what else I can use it for. So this will happen during the budgetary phase, right? When you get the budget in, you go to your board of approval, they ask you that. So these are some of the things which you can highlight to them.
Thank you, Kevin.
Romeo, I think one thing you can add that we don't actually see from a perspective of the business discovery or that homework that you do prior to actually execution. Can you describe a bit what happens? Why it actually takes 12 months? Right? I think that's the gap here.
I remember the one who approved the budget would be the, the senior management, and oftentimes this involves a lot of money, and then they have to see the strategic value of this project. So it's important that you get the buy-in from the chief executive officers, and so it's more like you have to start on the compliance requirement, and that there will be a regulatory requirement as well as the SEC reporting requirements. But you have to package it so there will be additional value from the system that's beyond compliance, and you have to somehow speak their language, okay? Their language is what would be the added value, okay? So that one. And oftentimes, so we've seen in the current projects that we have on the IFRS 17, the whole project process, half of that is really just bringing the current system at par with the best practice requirements of IFRS 4, okay? For you to effectively layer the IFRS 17, there is a presumption that the current system are robust enough to address even the current requirements. So what we are finding out is that when you are trying to design the source system requirements to feed the data requirements for IFRS 17, you need to correct and bring up the current systems to the best practice state under the reporting standards. Like when we see some corporate accounts and group insurance, they are not in the administration system. They are in an Excel-based arrangement. Some companies, they don't have an investment accounting system. Okay? And then of course your actual software they are doing it only on evaluation purposes. But for pricing product development, they're not using the actual software yet. So that's one thing good about installing IFRS 17 is that you are trying to strengthen the current system. To address even the current requirements. So you can really level up to the global requirements at least IFRS 17.
We have one question around CSM calculation from Manlife. So here's Christopher.
So I'm Christopher from Manlife, so accounting department. So I'm just curious about accounting for CSM. So it's a new concept for IFRS 17. So meaning you compute it based on the discounted rate of cash flows, expected cash flows, as well as the risk factors. However, what happens then if there's a case of miscalculation, for example, and the CSM has determined that it has a negative value already? So how do we work on the accounting on that CSM?
I remember CSM is like the present value of profit, okay, in excess of your best estimate, and then also your provision for adverse deviation and some reason, what you call risk adjustment. Okay? The rest of the value of the premium is what you call your present value profits, right? That's a CSM. Now, the determination of the CSM is dependent on whether it is a variable fee approach for UN or participating policies. You have for GMM, general model for product, traditional products. So
There are different sources of changes in the CSM. Okay, one is that you know, usual remeasurements from one period to another, where you have to reflect the actual to expected variances. You know? So there's an automatic adjustment to your CSM, you know, absorbing this actual to expected variances. No? Okay, so remember CSM is a profit, present value profit, but effectively, it is being used like a profit buffer, okay? So, yun. So, when you have, an after one period, reporting period, you have actual expected variances, the CSM somehow absorbs it, okay? And now, the second sources is that when you have to change assumptions, the actuaries will want to suddenly finds out something, or they wake up differently, and they kind of moody, and then they decide to change assumption. Then there are recalculations also, and some of the changes in assumptions are absorbed in the CSM model. And I think your regular IFRS 17 subledger lends to that, you know, capturing those changes. Okay. But remember, in the IFRS 17 ledger, they are so granular and itemized that you can identify these, and you can always rationalize, you know, the impact of these changes. And there will be feeding a lot of management information on, you know, on the effect of the changes in the CSM. So, there will be a lot of uses in just a simple, you know, changes in your CSM. And that really points to some strategic management by the company.
Yeah, I can add on to that. So to verify the CSM accuracy, there's a few things you need to do, right? And when you do the calculation of the CSM, you always will extract current period and the previous reporting period. True? So this is the first checkpoint you can do. You can do the calculation checks. Secondly, if you to reconcile with finance division, there's this trial journal and balance over here you see on the screen. This will give you the CSM output, means the CSM movement at initial recognition, going to the various factors that causes the CSM movement, like, right? So this is where you find that there's some abnormality that occurs in the results, you can go into the drawback reports. So this drawback report will then link you back into the data input that was used, plus the calculation that you also used to calculate the CSM. So these are some of the checks and balances that the technology can provide for you. But of course, during the implementation, before you go live, we will use test cases, right? That means we'll use your organization data input, we put it through the technology just to make sure that it's aligned to the output. That test case environment you use can be a few things. First, it could be your actual software. It could be a consulting firm software that they provide for test basis, or it could even be SAS Excel spreadsheet that we also maintain for test case basis. Right. So that's why for CSM movements, before you go live, the testing will be done very rigorously as part of the configuration setup. Right. Then if you go live, you find that the CSM doesn't look very unusual versus the previous period versus last period's reporting. You have all these reports to help you drill down into those areas that's probably causing it.
I have another question regarding your insurance accounting. So currently, how we do insurance accounting is that we see a portion of our premiums collected versus the payout and have it accounted for another company. However, what if we discuss about two different approaches for computing CSM like the BAA, BPA, and BFP? Is it possible for example, us applying a particular approach, then the reinsurer applying a different approach? So for example, I've been using BAA, and the reinsurer will be applying BFP. Is it possible?
Oh yeah, and there can be different models adapted by on the insurance, you know, by the seating or the insurer and how the insurance company will put up its own insurance. I mean, it's a, their model will be from their perspective, and some reinsurance treaty will be long, can be long, okay? And the reinsurance treaty of the insurance company will have to be, you know, be from the perspective of the company. So they can, there may have the differences in the models, the measurement models of the insurer and the insurance company, okay? Now, in terms of how you will model the reinsurance of the insurance company, there are some would generate, the actuaries will generate like all the exposure inclusive of reinsurance, okay? And then you also have to generate your present values net of reinsurance. And then sometimes they generate the risk adjustment, you know, gross basis, and the risk adjustment on a net basis. And the risk adjustment for that reinsurance is actually the difference of the two. So that's one model that some companies are using in determining the values for insurance.
Any more questions?
Your questions are very detailed.
Hello, good afternoon. I'm Franz from Meridian Consulting Group. So my question is regarding the last bullet on one of the last four slides that you've shown us. I think that's kind of critical factors affecting the success of implementation of IFR 17 project. Yep. So the last bullet is there is the testing process through the use of the IFR 17 tool. So my question is, how do you de-risk a testing process, and what tool would be used to de-risk a test process, and what test process to be de-risked, and then what would be the expected output from that de-risk?
So the IFR 17 testing tool, there's a few tools that you can utilize, right? When we talk about de-risking the testing process, we want to make sure that whatever that's been configured, right, you need to test it as part of the system implementation test. So that's where we will utilize a few components. Firstly, the organization, which means the insurance company's data inputs. Okay? Whatever that you have really done for the contract group level, we will use our data input. We'll push it through, means we will generate the data, extract the data, and then we let the testing tool consume this data to do the calculation for you. So what kind of testing tools are we looking at? There are a few testing tools you can use. Firstly, if you work with some of the consulting firms, they may have their own testing tools available. SAS, we also have our own testing tools that we use, right? To make sure that the output that goes in is aligned with the output that comes, that, you know, that both the technology and the Excel spreadsheet has the same kind of output that's generated from there. Even if you have an actual software that may give you a very simple CSM calculation plus output, you can also use that as a testing tool. Right? So the testing tool is not a problem. The de-risking is, of course, we can look at a few scenarios. Right? So scenarios could be like, mortality increases, lapse increases by 20%, mortality increases by 3%, first year, second year, mortality goes back to 0%. These are all the different business scenarios you need to consider when it comes to testing, right? Because this is going to affect your output. Now in SAS, we have a few test scenarios that we do use with our insurance clients to do this testing itself. If you proceed in this journey for IFRS 17, you realize that some people may come to you and say that I want to do 4,000 test scenarios. And each test scenario will cost you $10,000. You don't need to do that. Okay? A typical testing scenario, we can use about 50. Let's say we use about 60 scenarios, different scenarios to test it. It's good enough. You don't need to do 4,000 test scenarios. So you must take note of it, because they will come and they say, I'm going to do all this. No. If you want some scenarios, when we go for implementation, we can share all this with you. Now, if you want some third-party advice, we are more than happy, right, to work together to see whether this is a reasonable request that some of the firms have made known to you. So let me see if I can pull up one of the testing tools for you to show. So what you see here, these are some of very quick business cases that we have developed for IFRS 17 content package. This data that you see later are all actually actual customer data, right? Based on the, you know, the 250 test cases we've done, these are actually the actual test cases. This is an example of a testing tool that we provide. So let's click on sub-portfolio one. Sub-portfolio one, you can see the description here. Changes in expectations, partial derecognition, changes in profit and RAs. We'll use the building block approach to manage this. And these are the data inputs that come in, right? Premium is constant every year. Claims is constant. Then you have your CSM margin over time, right? Sorry, first year is one. Second year, your premiums has dropped. But your mortality has gone up to 832 means of claims have gone up already. This will be the final output that you want to look at, right? So these are your disclosure statements, your SCI, and your balance sheet, okay? Now, all this, if you look at it, right, these are all formula-driven. See, these are all formulas-driven over here. If I make any changes to any of these parameters, let's say we remove one of this, the numbers will also change. Right, so this is how we can use this as a testing tool.
Okay, time check. We have 5 minutes left. And is there any more questions? Yep.
Maybe you can ask questions from anyone from Copeland.
Any... Okay, I think I think we had a very full afternoon, right? On behalf of SAS Philippines, Technopac, and Mirite Consulting, we want to give the audience a round of applause first. Thank you for sitting in. Throughout the whole sessions, I think one of the last ask we have is we have surveys. One pager of a, you know, take a survey form, how we did well, how we did not do well. You can complain about the door, right? And I think Yvonne will take care of you because she has, like, I think a token for her appreciation, yeah? And I think what you will expect, like, mid-half next year, I think we believe that there's going to be a lot more awareness around I-17. One of the feedback I got is they feel they want to go deeper. So I think we'll prepare for that, right? Okay, so otherwise, if you have your forms complete, we hope to see you again soon, and please keep in touch, and have a good evening, everyone. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of SAS PH Inside Out. I'd just like to remind everyone, please follow us on Instagram or Facebook. Our Spotify podcast is out there. We try to keep it updated. Some things to look forward to. We have in a few weeks, we're actually ironing up a SAS day. So this is basically a co-hosted event with clients. So we try to bring in some of our thought leaders or some of our experts around different domains in analytics and, you know, try to showcase how to create use cases, make more initiatives from a client perspective, and build this culture of analytics. So this is really the objective of it. So expect more content from that perspective. And, you know, what is it now? It's hitting November or the end of November and then start of December. So it'll be pretty busy. And if I can bring in a bit more, you know, content here and there, I'll do that. So please stay tuned and have a good weekend, everyone. Cheers.